The following program has been brought to you by Rolling Press, a family-run, eco-friendly printing company. For more information, visit rollingpress.com.
I'm Brianna Kurtz, host of Eat Your Words. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hi, this is Joshua David Stein. You're listening to the Joshua David Stein Variety Hour, Half Hour. Today we have a wonderful program for you all about vegetables, more accurately about the guilt we have about not eating vegetables and eating meat instead. At least that's the way I look at it. Vegetables, the anti-meat. We have three wonderful guests. First, we have Matthew Reeve reading poetry about vegetables. We have Juan Waters, formerly of the band the Beats or contemporaneously, but also performing as Juan Waters, and Tyler Cord, chef extraordinaire and hero of broccoli. Let's start the half hour with a segment we like to call Food Poem in an English accent, and we actually have a theme song for that. Here it is.
Food Poem in an English accent.
Matthew Reeve. So before you launch into your food poem, where's your accent from?
From West London.
And is it a pure West London accent, or you're half American? So how does that play into it?
I am half American. I'm also from the posh part of West London. So
this is a posh, fully posh, half London, half American accent.
That's a good description.
Okay, let's hear the first poem.
The Cauliflower. By James McMichael.
Can you just say the cauliflower once more?
The cauliflower.
It's lovely.
Her words clot in his head. He presses himself to remember and feels the skin peel back, the skull bleach, crack, fall away. All that's left of him is the brain, its tissue knotting up to shade him, the pain of its light pulsing, how to move, how to move.
It's short but lovely. Now, you're a filmmaker, but if you have a second career, it could always be reading poetry, audiobooks of poetry.
If that pays bills, then I might just go for it.
Now, the second poem is actually not a poem as much as it is lyrics to my favorite Beach Boys song called Vegetables. And the story on the song is that Brian Wilson and the rest of the Beach Boys were high out of their minds, and I think they were wondering what it would be like to be vegetables. And if you listen to the recording, Paul McCartney is pretending to be celery in like the third verse. He goes, ch, 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 and that's Paul McCartney. So there's your trivia. Let's hear the lyrics to this read dramatically in an English accent.
Vegetables, written by Brian Wilson and Van Dyke Parks. I'm gonna be round my vegetables. I'm gonna chow down my vegetables. I love you most of all, my favorite vegetable. If you brought a big brown bag of them home, I'd jump up and down and hope you'd toss me a carrot. I'm going to keep well my vegetables, cart off and sell my vegetables. I love you most of all, my favorite vegetable. Oh, oh, tabba, vegger, vegel. I tried to kick the ball, but my tenny flew right off. I'm red as a beet, cause I'm so embarrassed. I know that you'll feel better when you send us in your letter and tell us the name of your favorite vegetable. I know that you'll feel better when you send us in your letter and tell us the name of your favorite vegetable.
Food poem in an English accent.
Thank you, Matthew Reeve. Now you are off to a Rangers game. Best of luck, and I'll see you around.
Thank you for having me.
Now we have another section.
Are we on?
We're on. This is called, we have a theme song for this as well, so let me find it. Here it is.
Now it's time for a musical guest who's gonna sing a song or two.
Hello, Juan Waters.
Hello?
Hello? Is he on?
Hello?
Now you're on.
Hello. Hello?
A lovely voice. How are you doing?
Pretty good.
So this is a show about vegetables. Tell me about your favorite memories about vegetables, Juan.
I don't know. I like to eat soup, and I like when soup has vegetables in it.
So you like veggie soup?
I like chicken in the soup. I like meat, beef, whatever, yeah. Whatever. But I like it when it has a hearty soup with vegetables in it.
I can understand that passion.
Yeah. I also like salads a lot.
Salads notably are homes for vegetables.
Yeah, I like a lot. I like eating greens a lot.
Greens are often vegetables.
Spinach, you know, lettuce, stuff like that.
It sounds like you have a very healthy relationship with vegetables.
I like every food.
All foods.
All foods.
What are you going to play for us today?
I don't know. I'm gonna do an instrumental first.
Yeah.
Just a little guitar playing.
Okay.
And then I'm going to do another song after.
Okay.
Kind of connected to it very quick, and then a little taste of it, and then, that's it.
Let's hear.
You're the best one behind your walls. You're the best one to yourself. Come out here, see the light. Come out here, let them know what you think about yourself. Pasó, che, nadie sabe cómo me siento, me porto mal. No preguntan, no cuento qué pasó, no cuento, me siento mal. En mí un auto que va a explotar. Paso ellos dicen si yo me porto bien o me porto mal. Yo cuando me porto no me porto bien ni me porto mal. En mí una sombra.
Think I don't know, our listeners obviously can't see this, but we're watching a date happen right in front of our window.
Yeah.
And I feel like listening right now, she's checking her phone and he's looking bored.
She's on Facebook, I see.
Is she on Facebook?
Yeah.
He was on Twitter before.
Oh yeah.
But I could see his phone. But listening to that lovely instrumental in the beginning just made it seem so much more melancholic. Yeah. You know, it's just such a. She's sighing. I don't think it's going well.
That's love right there.
Is that what love looks like?
Married life.
What's that?
Married life.
That's what married life looks like. You're not married. Not yet. Well, I am. It's
kind of like that, right?
It's kind of like that, yeah.
Ups and downs.
Ups and downs. Lots of Facebook checking. I did have a question. So you're clearly bilingual and you sing in both English and Spanish. Do songs come to you and do words and lyrics come to you in one language immediately more than the other? Or does it depend on the song?
I don't really think about it that way. Could I have a little more volume in my headphones, please? Hello, all right. I just write songs. Sometimes they come in English, sometimes they come in Spanish. Lately, I've been thinking about writing Spanish a little more because I never really tried to do that purposely. I would just do it whenever they came that way. I've been trying to do it more because I go on tour and I see a lot of kids that are Hispanic come to the show and they enjoy it a lot when I sing in Spanish. So I've been thinking about it a little bit more and I want to give them what they want, you know?
You want to give the crowd what they want.
Yeah.
That's great.
And also, it's good for me to explore that side of me. And also, I play... There's been times when I sang in English and I was saying things that certain people, let's say my parents, weren't able to understand. That's why I sang in English. I feel free to say certain things that they won't know what I'm singing about.
Right.
Sometimes I sing in Spanish... So certain people don't know what I'm singing about.
Right. And that other people do know what you're singing about.
Yeah, but I sing about certain things that I have a problem with. And perhaps the person that I have the problem with won't understand what I'm singing about. So I feel a little more comfortable singing in that language.
That's hopefully they will never use Google Translate.
Oh, it's never like that. It's never like hurtful in any way.
Yeah.
It's and also I sing in my own. I understand it in a way, and people understand it in a different way.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Do you have another song for us, or
no? That's it.
That was it.
I mean, I was just kind of jamming out right there.
Yeah, I like that little transition area into the new song. So, Juan, there's a guy sitting behind you named Tall Juan.
My friend Tall Juan, he's over here.
Hi, Tall Juan.
What's up?
How's it going? So do you have anything you're playing?
Yeah, I play music with Juana quite often. Tonight we're going to be doing a show.
And where's that?
If anyone's listening to the show right now, live.
Oh, come on.
No, I mean, that would want to come. I mean, I know there's people out there, but if anybody that's interested to come to the show, come and say hello that you heard us on the radio show. We're going to play his music. Of course, he goes by Tall Juan. That's his name.
He's very. Our listeners will appreciate that he is a very tall man.
Yeah. Handsome looking Argentinian guy.
It's true.
So I'm gonna be playing drums with him tonight. We're gonna be doing that.
Where is that?
At Don Pedro's. Maybe at 9 o'clock.
Yeah, free tickets.
Oh, free show.
And it's free. Oh, yeah. No excuse not to go.
Come, have a beer, watch the show.
And then tomorrow.
Tomorrow we're gonna be doing Juan is going to be playing with me as well. We're going to be doing my music tomorrow under my name, which is Juan Waters.
Yeah, and where is that?
Baby's All Right. The ones that have tickets could come. The ones that don't have tickets can't come because there's no more tickets to go.
Oh, there you go.
But
too popular.
I guess. We'll be playing around soon, hopefully.
Okay.
And I guess that's it.
Juan Waters and Tall Juan,
yeah,
thank you so much, guys, and have a lovely evening.
Thanks for inviting us.
Oh, and we have a theme song for the end of the musical guest, and Kyle Forrester, who is a friend of Juan, you know.
I know him, man.
He sang this one. Here it is.
That was just a musical guest who came and sang a song or two.
And this is the Joshua David Stein Variety Hour, half hour. We'll be right back after these messages.
You're waiting. You're listening to Waiting on God by Ben Willis.
I will just blow the people below me, just waiting on God. The storybooks tell it, they tell it so well, that the people before us just waiting on God, just waiting on God. And now that the tale has been retold, the storytellers just waiting on God, just waiting on God. I wish I was strong. Wish I was wrong. The waters run cold. Waiting on God. Waiting on God. We're all just waiting on God.
Today's program was brought to you by Rolling Press. Rolling Press is a family-run digital and offset print house that brings together eco-friendly methods, ethical practices, and personalized service. Using environmentally responsible papers, non-toxic inks, and wind power, Rolling Press represents the harmony of traditional craftsmanship and mindful sustainability. Rolling Press offers advice on reducing paper waste and energy consumption, helping you save money and minimize your carbon footprint. For more information, visit rollingpress.com.
Hi, this is Chad Pagano, former Army sniper, host of the Wild Game Domain, and you're listening to the HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
This is Joshua David Stein. You're listening to the Joshua David Stein Variety Hour. Sorry, half hour. Today we are talking about vegetables, or as I like to call them, the anti-meat. And to kick off our second segment, I'm going to read a little from a piece I wrote for Eater called Confessions of a Self-Loathing Carnivore. It's been hours since I had meat, a fennel sausage from the Whole Foods breakfast bar. It's been a day since I had my last burger, a dry-aged beauty with bloody rivulets from the Nomad bar in New York City. And it's been 2 days since I ate a 120-day aged tomahawk chop from Osteria Marini. I'm a meat eater, avowedly, virulently, and prodigiously. It is not my aim here, nor is it necessary to extol the splendors of meat. That has been done before by others more eloquent, more versed in rendering poetry from fat and muscle. But though I feel them, taste them, smell them no less strongly than those other silver-tongued carnivores, I shall leave the noble qualities of beef, pork, chicken, and fish, and venison, rabbit, woodcock, pheasant, and frog unenumerated. This is not a celebration of meat, it is a confession for my weakness for it. For when I eat meat, I am participating in nothing less than calculated moral myopia. There should be as little doubt as to the profoundly harmful effects of our meat dependence as there is about global warming. Americans eat approximately 234 pounds of meat a year. That's a fat man made of meat. This meat, of course, was once an animal, like man, a fact that continues to assert itself no matter how we attempt to skirt it. To avoid this inconvenient truth, cattlemen call cattle beef product, even before they've transitioned from life unto death, cow unto meat. And we, consumers in general, foodies in particular, focus on cuts, preparations, dry aging, wet aging, char, thyme and rosemary, grass feeding, grain finishing, antibiotic freedom. But annoyingly, when one looks up from the steak frites, the real consequences of eating meat come into focus. There are two for me that weigh most heavily. The first is its effect on the planet. The second is its effect on the cow in question. For both, my steak addiction is fatal. As for the first, according to a study published in the journal Climactic Change, a heavy meat eater contributes twice as much to global warming than a vegetarian. And my guest today, Tyler Cord. Hi, Tyler.
Hi.
So, the reason I asked you on is, well, you reached out to me after that piece very kindly and said it kind of encapsulated some of the issues that you were dealing with as a meat eater turning vegetarian.
Yeah.
Tyler is the owner of the Number 7 Sub Shop, which is a sandwich shop which has meat sandwiches, and it has an increasing amount, I would say, of vegetarian options.
Sure.
And
but I think that's kind of the inherent problem right there, is when you say we have meat sandwiches and we have vegetarian sandwiches, because calling it a vegetarian sandwich does imply that vegetarians should eat it and the rest of us maybe shouldn't. But I think that's something that we've always done a pretty good job of, like, not labeling them as vegetarian sandwiches and kind of pushing them as just sandwiches.
Oh, I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying, but it's kind of like a meat sandwich. It's not only that meat should eat it, if, you know what I mean? Like a vegetarian sandwich, not only vegetarians should eat it.
Yeah, we should all just start eating everything.
We should all just start eating more of it.
And so by labeling things... Anyway, I'm sorry. Keep
going. So you would just call it a sandwich.
Yeah.
You serve sandwiches.
We serve sandwiches. And about half of them don't have any meat in them, but they're still just sandwiches.
So where are you on the kind of meat eating, not meat eating continuum? Eating thing continuum?
I'm not a vegetarian, but I am a very... I try to be a very conscious non-vegetarian, be really aware of what's happening and what I'm eating and what it means kind of to the world. I'm not particularly concerned with my own personal health, because I don't want to live forever, and I don't think that anybody really needs that, for me anyway.
No one needs you to live forever.
No, I don't. I think that would be inappropriate. But I do think about all the, you know, the things that you talked about in that article, as well as the kind of economic issue. Like, there's just so many reasons to not eat meat that every time I do, I try to think about what it means and why I'm doing it, and would I be better off not doing it. It's something I think about, a lot about.
And you're also in a unique, well, not in a unique, but from a lot of people I speak to, a unique perspective of being a business owner and a food provider. So
sure.
What you put on that menu also has an effect, obviously, on what people eat. And one of the things that I've always loved about Number 7 is, although you'll excuse the term, that you've always served vegetarian sandwiches. And you're right, it's never been a big deal. It's not like you've had the meat section and a vegetarian section.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not like you go to a pizzeria and say, they have a bunch of vegetarian... I mean, like, the most popular pizza is probably just plain cheese pizza, which happens to be vegetarian, but nobody thinks of it as pizza with something missing. They just think of it as... That's what pizza is, you know?
Do you feel like you've had to work to change the expectation for sandwiches in terms of having a meat protein? Tell me about this broccoli sandwich is really the sandwich that encapsulated for me the possibilities of having a vegetable protein.
Yeah.
And
it's something I never thought about until very recently. I've started thinking a lot more about kind of what we've done and what that means, because I just kind of have always felt like everything is good in a sandwich. Since I was a kid, I have been making broccoli sandwiches, and my favorite pizza is just a margarita with nothing on it, and I love spaghetti with tomato sauce. Like, I love all these things that, again, happen to be vegetarian, but I never looked at them as being vegetarian food. I just thought of them as these dishes that I love. So when it came time to do the sandwich shop, we were, you know, in the same building as the Breslin, and April Bloomfield, who kind of inspired, you know, her menu was so meat heavy and so wonderfully executed meat heavy, that I was like, well, I'm not going to compete with that. So let's do a bunch of sandwiches that don't have meat in them. But again, I never really thought about it as, I guess I thought about it intentionally as an anti-trend and something that, you know, like, everybody in town was serving a ton of meat. And so all I've ever wanted to do is do exactly what nobody else, you know, what everybody's not doing.
Unfortunately for you, you know, April's new book is about vegetables.
No, but it's great. She kind of, And she did that. You know, like, she kind of took me to this place that nobody could really compete with in a lot of ways, and now she's moved on to the next thing. She's talking about vegetables, and I think that that's great.
Did you have a... what was the customer feedback, or your clientele's feedback about having sandwiches without a meat protein in them?
Yeah. Well, so it's interesting. The broccoli sandwich is the one that everybody is the sandwich that we probably get our most press about. That and a tofu sandwich that we used to do are like the two things that get written about the most when people talk about Number 7 Sub. But they were never like super huge sellers. They just get talked about a lot. But our best seller has pretty much always been and probably always will be a zucchini sandwich. It's a zucchini parm that's like an eggplant parm with all the ingredients swapped out for different ingredients. But the reception to the vegetarian stuff or to the non-meat sandwiches has always been great. And we, again, I never thought about it. We never organized the menu in a way that had, you know, the vegetarian sandwiches here and the non-vegetarian, the meaty sandwiches over here. It was always just kind of, these are the 10 sandwiches that we're selling right now.
Do you feel, I mean, as a restaurant reviewer, I go to a lot of restaurants and it does feel like I'm cheating, or for instance, personally, I don't enjoy eating meat that much for all the reasons I put in the piece. I enjoy it on one level, and on another level, I feel horrible.
It's delicious. I mean, it's just delicious.
It's delicious, but immoral.
But totally, yeah, totally immoral.
At the same time, as a reviewer, I feel like I have to try what a chef, you know, sometimes puts the most attention to, their marquee dishes and things like that. So I end up eating a lot of meat. And I wonder if, from your standpoint as a restaurateur, if, you know, do you think we'll ever get to a place where someone will, a menu will be as sort of agnostic in terms of what the protein is?
I don't know. I don't think so. Not anytime soon. You know, I mean, you look at the kind of, you look at what's happening to, like, everybody knows that there's just no more cod left in the ocean. You know what I mean? There used to be so, so much, and now there's hardly any. And we really focus on cod as this big issue. I mean, there's a ton of other fish, literally, in the sea. But no, there's not going to be suddenly a tilefish industry unless everybody suddenly decides they want to eat tilefish all the time, which they don't. You know, there's like a cape named after cod. It's the most, it's the thing everybody knows. And everybody is at this point kind of grown up to know that they want meat in every single meal that they eat. And so to suddenly convince everybody that they should eat more vegetables and to have all the chefs start only serving vegetables, like, I just, that's a huge shift. And I can't imagine how that would happen. Yeah. You know, I mean, like, our sandwich shop works in a kind of specific neighborhood in Manhattan, but I don't think you could just do that anywhere. I don't know. I mean, maybe. And the more that I, you know, I've been writing a cookbook about sandwiches, and I am writing about meat, and I feel the book is like turning me into a vegetarian, and it gets really weird to be writing about meat because I can't just in good faith just say, like, here's this sandwich about corned beef. You know, this is a recipe for corned beef. Like, make the sandwich without talking about what it means to be eating that corned beef and what it means to be buying that beef and where you're buying your beef and blah, blah, blah. It's getting really silly, and so it's pushing me more and more into wanting to just make it a vegetarian cookbook. But is that financially viable? Because at the end of the day, a restaurant in New York City is one of the hardest things that I know how to do, and it's hard to take chances, you know?
Yeah. I think going back to the thing we started the conversation with, the idea of having even the language, oh, this is a vegetarian sandwich versus this is a meat sandwich, does set up sort of different communities. Like, yeah, you have the vegetarian community, and then you have the meat-eating carnivorous community, which for now is definitely in the majority.
Yeah.
And oftentimes won't fuck with vegetarian. Like, that is just hippy-dippy.
Yeah, you almost have to trick them. We did this tasting event not too long ago, and we were serving a short rib sandwich, and we were serving a veggie burger, and the short rib sandwiches were going much faster than the veggie burgers, and so we had a bunch of veggie burgers sitting there, and this woman approached and asked what we had, and I said, we have these veggie burgers, you know, there's some short ribs coming, but, you know, please have one. And she said, oh, no, I eat meat, I can't. Like, it was, like, going to make her sick or something.
Right. If you eat meat, you eat meat exclusively.
Yeah. And I think it's if you can maybe, if we could trick them all.
Yeah.
If I said, no, it's pizza, then they would have been like, oh, of course, there's no meat on that. That's fine.
I mean, I think sandwiches, which is such an interest, is a very interesting subgenre, because you're right, pizza, pasta, there's a lot of things that are vegetarian, and no one calls them vegetarian. They're vegetarian by default.
Right.
But because the expectation for a sandwich is so often, usually like a cheese, a meat, and condiments, when you're missing that meat, it draws attention.
And that's what's happening. People think that they're missing things, and I think that's on chefs then to say, to actually make awesome stuff, as opposed to just saying, no, look, it's just like a steak dinner, but it's got a grilled portobello mushroom instead of a steak. That's pathetic, you know what I mean? Like, that's delicious, don't get me wrong, but that's just lazy, you know? Like, can we come up with things? And it's not about, I know I keep saying tricking people, but like, it is kind of tricking people. You know, the zucchini parm is our biggest seller at the sub shop, and at our restaurant, we sell these double-decker broccoli tacos, and it's so goofy that everybody, I don't know, at first I think people just ordered it because it sounded weird, and now it's our most popular dish. And again, it's not missing anything, because you've never had a double-decker broccoli taco that had meat in it to begin with. I mean, like, it's such a goofy thing.
It's not aping a meat dish. It's
right.
Creating a new world.
Yeah.
New vegetarian.
And I think that's
world.
What we all need to spend a little more time getting more creative and figuring out how to do that.
So how does for the cookbook?
Yeah,
as it's you're becoming more and more of a vegetarian. When you look at number 7, kind of where its direction and its future, do you think you'll always have meat products, or are you hoping to transition away from that?
You know, I think I don't know. I think my business partners and I talk about it a fair amount, and I've been talking about that with chef buddies, and I think we could become a straight vegetarian restaurant. I've thought many times about, especially about number 7 sub being just a straight up vegetarian sandwich shop, but I do think that that means that a lot of people won't come. I think we, you know, would then have a fervent vegetarian following. We might make the same amount of money, we might do just as well, but then we would lose all those people, I think, that come to our shop looking for a sandwich, and they order the one that sounds best, and literally half the time that is a vegetarian sandwich, and
it's like
then they eat that. I feel like I'm doing a good thing there. If we become just a vegetarian sandwich shop, we might not...
You're partisan. I mean,
yeah.
Think about it in terms of media. You're
sure.
Now a reliable source. You're fair and balanced, right?
Yeah.
Because you do serve meat and also vegetarian.
Yeah. But I would ultimately, I think, like to invert the normal menu, the normal restaurant menu or the normal sandwich shop menu, which is we have all this food and then we have these couple of like token vegetarian things. I would love to just flip that around and say, we're not a vegetarian restaurant, we're a restaurant. But of course, most of our stuff is vegetarian because that's the responsible and humane and awesome thing to do. But we do have a couple of token meaty things for those of you that really feel like you need to eat meat or you're going
to ruin
die,
the world,
you know?
Yeah.
And again, I love meat, and I still do eat it. I don't eat it nearly as much as I used to, but I do. I love a roast beef sandwich like nobody's business.
And how close are you to having that balance right now?
Well, the sandwich shop is like kind of, I think we're at like 50-50. We just reopened our sandwich shop in Greenpoint as more of a bar called Number 7 North. And that's pretty darn close to being like totally vegetarian, but we have a cheeseburger and we have a steak frite, and then pretty much everything else is vegetarian.
Yeah. Tyler, thank you for chatting with me about the future of the world.
Thanks for having me.
About eating meat and not eating meat. I will talk to our listeners again at 6 p.m. next week. This is the Joshua David Stein Variety Hour, half hour. Have a great week.
Joshua David Stein Variety Hour.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.